Thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thirst for More podcast was created to help strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, fitness enthusiasts, and anyone that loves lifting heavy shit all be connected under one roof. We take deep dives into coaching, programming and training, running gyms, nutrition, and overall improving your knowledge in the field of strength and conditioning. If you're new here, I'm glad you're able to tune in and hope you can just take away one awesome piece of information today to help you along with your journey. If you're a returning supporter, I appreciate you being along for the ride. Now let's dive into today's episode. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley, and today we're diving into what I think is one of the most powerful and usually often misunderstood training methods in strength and conditioning, and that's the max effort method. Now, before we jump in deep into this information, I'm just going to ask you a general question if you're listening about the max effort method. When was the last time that you truly tested your one rep max, like in a meet or in training, right? So you actually picked a challenging weight. You kind of overstepped your boundaries, really tried to push yourself mentally, physically, probably even emotionally in that moment. And for some of you, that might seem like not that often that you do that. And for others, it might be every week. And those that use the conjugate method probably say, oh yeah, I can resonate that with a weekly training regime of the max effort method. But for some people, it's also been months since they put themselves in that position. And some people are even taught early on in training that lifting maximally all the time is dangerous. And this is where the max effort method kind of gets some issues thrown at it, is about how frequently you're lifting heavy and maximally. But here's the thing I want you to kind of take away right from the get-go, is that the max effort method isn't just about lifting heavy weights. It's about building absolute strength and rewiring your nervous system and literally teaching your body how to produce maximum force. And is there science behind it? Absolutely. And we're going to dive into that today. So we're going to talk about the systematic and strategic way that you implement the max effort method into your training. And so we're going to break down everything that you need to know about how to implement it, some different training cycles, some different thought processes here that I've had with this method for a very long time, something that I've used for a very long time myself whenever I competed. And I really genuinely liked max effort days myself when it came to my own training. So hopefully you can take some stuff away that you can at least implement into your training, whether it be from a powerlifting perspective, just trying to get stronger, or if you're trying to improve athletic performance. And so we're going to kind of talk about like where it came from, what the research is saying, and more importantly, how you can use it safely in your training plan, no matter of what you're trying to train with, because I do think it does have a place in your training program at a certain point, whether, again, you're about powerlifter, weightlifter, CrossFit athlete, getting strong, athletic performance. We're going to cover it all. So if you're the kind of person that likes to take notes, this might be a good one. Or if you are a Fathom person, maybe you know Fathom, you can use Fathom and it'll actually like listen to stuff and record it for you, like on calls and stuff. So I'm not sure if you can Fathom a podcast or a YouTube video, but give it a shot. And before we dive in too deep, if you are listening here on Spotify, iTunes, listening to where you like to enjoy your podcast, make sure you go over to YouTube, hit the subscribe button, hit that like button, really appreciate it to help get more reach, or leave a 5-star review of the podcast if you happen to like any information that you're lifting. And also before you go, if you are into supplements, make sure you check out NutriBio at NutriBio.com. Use code SMITLEY10, that's SMITLEY10. Save you 10% off all your supplements. Let you know that I sent you and that you're getting your information from a good place. So do me a favor, use all that stuff and all the resources available to you. Now let's go into the max effort method in particular. So let's talk about what it is and what it is not. So from a basics perspective, the max effort method is defined as lifting a maximal load against maximal resistance. And by maximal, we really actually mean maximal for the most part. And we're typically talking about weights at 90% or higher of your one rep max, or your quote unquote estimated one rep max, if you happen to be doing a variation that you don't know your one rep max of. So you're going to have to use some RPE for newer variations. We'll get to that later. But probably heard of this guy, legendary strength scientist Vladimir Zatorsky identified three primary methods of strength training in his book, Science and Practice of Strength Training. If you've not read that book and you are in strength and conditioning, where you are about getting stronger, faster, more explosive, working with athletes, that is a must-read book from cover to cover. It is like the Cliff Notes version of Super Training. You can literally read it in a day if you really put your mind to it, or you can digest it over a week and kind of marinate on things. But I do think it is a book that is a must-read, always at the top of my list for strength and conditioning. I even reference it several times a year whenever I'm doing programming and looking up stuff. So anyways, going back to that, three primary methods. Number one, as we're talking about, the max effort method, lifting maximal loads, kind of explains it there. Next, going to be the dynamic effort method, lifting submaximal loads as fast as possible or with maximum speed intent. And then the repetition method, lifting to failure with submaximal loads or repetition-based work. And here's what Zatorsky said, and this is quoting out of his book, "The method of maximal effort is considered superior for improving both intramuscular and intermuscular coordination. The muscles and CNS adapt only to the load placed upon them." So in other words, if we want to get really strong, like moving the heaviest weight that you possibly can, the max effort method is going to be vital to be able to do that in some capacity. So from a history perspective, though, the roots of this method traces back to Soviet sports scientists in the 60s and the 70s, and researchers like Yuri Vershkansky and A.S. Priplin were studying on how to optimize strength development for Olympic weightlifters. Those are two names. Also, if you're highly involved in strength conditioning, you should know those last names, Vershkansky and Priplin. Then you had the Bulgarian weightlifting system under coach Ivan Abajev. Again, probably a name you should be familiar with if you're in the strength conditioning world, who took things to a completely different level. And you've probably heard about the Bulgarians. They would train two to three times per day, maxing out on snatch, clean and jerk, and front squat in every single session. They focused on the specificity and maximal loads constantly. So the goal was to make this a brutal training program, and it was effective. But as I'm sure you kind of figured, many athletes burned out or got cut from the program. So essentially what they did with that program is they just maxed everybody out all the time. And those that had the superior genetics and recovery would see the biggest returns on investment from the training program, make it through the actual program that they're going through to get them ready for the Olympics. And that's how they got their best athletes. It literally was just weeding people out with destroying their bodies in the process. Now, if we fast forward to the United States side of things, you have, again, name you should know, Louis Simmons from Westside Barbell. And Louis took the principles from the Soviets and the Bulgarian systems, and he adapted them to what became known, as we know, as a conjugate method. So instead of maxing out on the same lifts every week, Westside would rotate their exercises, maxing out on different variations, like obviously box squats, different pin press variations, deadlift variations, rack pulls, block pulls, you name it. Good mornings. This is key because it allowed the athletes to train with maximal loads every single week without the negative CNS burnout that comes from repeating the same max effort lifts over and over and over. And so the training parameters, the max effort training, here's what they actually look like. So from an intensity perspective, ideally you're going to want to get to 90 to 100% of your one rep max. And I'll be honest, 85%-ish plus is kind of a good threshold for most people. But technically you want to try to get into that 90% plus or more range to actually truly be training max effort. And I really say 85% plus is because I really like you providing heavy max triples and sets of fives at times. And that will still get you in that 85% plus range if you're doing it right. The volume is usually much lower because, again, the weights are heavier. So typically 1 to 3 reps per set, again, going kind of that 1 to 3 rep maximum. And the frequency is going to be 1 to 2 times per week per movement pattern. We'll kind of go into the frequency a little bit more from a conjugate system perspective, if you probably already know this. But usually the goal here is not high frequency, right? And then the exercise selection is going to be your compound movements, like your squats, your deadlift, your bench press, your overhead press, and other variations of your main big quality compound movements. And if we're talking about powerlifting specifically, which is how the conjugate method is kind of known for, is that usually you're looking at your squat, your bench press, and your deadlift variations. But overhead press can be mixed in, especially if you have a new strongman or shoulder work needs to be addressed for your powerlifting-based bench press work. But according to Prelipum's chart, which again, I would recommend that you look up Google. It's a good guidance system to kind of give you an idea of where you should be with your sets and your reps. You can kind of figure that out. And it analyzed training data from 780 highly qualified weightlifters. Again, so they're using weightlifting movements, but the optimal volume at 90% or above is around 4 to 10 total lifts, with 7 lifts being quote unquote ideal. So usually you want to try to accumulate around 7 reps or so in that 90% plus or above. You might think, well, if I'm doing max effort work, how do I do that? Well, the goal is to obviously build up into that, right? So you might get up to 90% for a single, 92.5% for a single, 95% for a single, and then you might say 97% and then go for a PR, right? Or you could just go 90, 9500 and then maybe gotta break it with 101, 102, really break the PR, right? So 4 lifts for me, from what I've found, trying to do this in a powerlifting perspective seems to be a little more optimal than that 7, and that 10 is just absolutely brutal. Like if you're doing 10 singles at 90%, that's going to get really, really rough. That's just going to suck, being honest. So just gives you a good range to kind of gun for there when it comes to your max effort work. Now, let's go to the neurological side. And what's happening in your body here neurologically is kind of where the max effort method really shines, in my opinion. So the first one's going to be talking about motor unit recruitment. And so your muscles are made up of motor units. If you don't know what that is, basically a motor neuron and all the muscle fibers that it innervates. So not all motor units are created equal. So you have smaller, slow twitch motor units that fire first for lighter loads, and larger, fast twitch motor units that only get recruited when you need serious force. So as you can kind of tell, when you lift a maximal load, your nervous system has to recruit the maximum number of motor units that is possible to be able to complete the lift, and it has to be able to do it quickly and ideally as efficiently as possible. And so this is called rate coding and motor unit synchronization. This is something that you don't get from volume sub-maximal work. I want to make that very clear. You do not tap into this aspect of motor unit recruitment with sub-maximal volume loading. So keep that in mind. You've got to do max effort-based work to be able to tap into this. Research shows that training at high intensities above 80 to 90% creates superior adaptation in the motor unit recruitment patterns, the neural firing frequency, intermuscular coordination, which is different muscles working together. How, if you do a squat, for example, how your glutes and your hamstrings and your quads and everything works together to get the weight to continue to move, and an intramuscular coordination, which is within the muscle itself, like the actual, you know, getting into the fiber-based work and how all that part of it works, not necessarily the synchronization of everything, but just deep down the anatomy and physiology side and how the muscle actually contracts. So it works on both aspects there. Now, from a central nervous system perspective, max effort training essentially teaches your central nervous system to become more efficient. It's like upgrading the wiring between your brain and your muscles. You're not just getting stronger muscles. And stronger muscles are important to being stronger, obviously, but you're getting better at using those muscles. You're the communication that you're having between your brain and the voluntary musculature is now going to be better because of its being quote unquote hardwired. It is more reinforced and it's more intense with maximal loads than it is with submaximal loads, which is why you need so many repetitions to be able to get that down. A study by Jenkins and colleagues found that training with 80% of 1RM produced greater increases in voluntary muscle activation and EMG amplitude compared to training with 30% 1RM over 6 weeks. Kind of went back to what I just said. So 80% or more, and then obviously with conjugate method, we're going to be in that 90% or more cases than not. So let's kind of talk about what does some of the research say. So multiple studies have demonstrated that training in the so-called quote-unquote strength zone, so 1 to 5 reps at a high intensity, produces superior gains and maximal strength compared to moderate or higher rep-based training. Again, we're talking about strength, not talking about hypertrophy. We know now that when it comes to hypertrophy-based training, you can get bigger essentially at any rep range as long as you train close enough to failure. Talking about strength, and you need to be in that 1 to 5 rep range, give or take. So one influential study by Moss and colleagues in 1997 compared three different groups. They had a group that they're training at 90% of their runner max, a group that was training at 35% of their runner max, and a group training at 15% of their one rep max. And after 9 weeks, the 90% group showed a 15.2% increase in their one rep max strength, significantly more than the 35% group at 10.1 and the 15% group at 6.6. So now, does this mean that lighter loads don't work? No, you certainly can build strength to some degree with lighter weights. But if your goal is to maximize your strength, then lifting the absolute heaviest weight that you can, or at least getting into the 90% range or more consistently, is then going to be more essential, especially for the advanced lifters, and you really want to actually maximize that strength over time. So again, going back to kind of the hypertrophy strength thing and being in the rep ranges, it's not that you can't get stronger, because we know that if you take inexperienced lifters and give them sets of 15 to 20, they still get stronger, right? They're still building strength neurologically, because again, that inter and intramuscular coordination, and they're so fresh and wet behind the ears. But if you're really trying to maximize your strength and you already have some general strength, then we know that training closer to that 90% one rep max is going to be much more efficient down the road. Now, there is the principle of specificity, and this is where the DUP-based powerlifting community, especially like USAPL and whatever, really has an issue with conjugate, is because of specificity. And so your body adapts specifically to the demands that you place on it, which is why they're going to say, oh, you should squat 3 times a week and bench 3 times a week and deadlift 2 times a week. So if you want to do that, then you want to lift heavy singles. You need to practice lifting heavy singles. You can't just do higher sets of 6, 8, 10 reps or whatever and expect to get great at doing heavy singles. It's a completely different skill set. So this becomes more important as you get more advanced. So beginners can get stronger just doing, again, we kind of talk about doing anything. But the elite athletes and the elite strength athletes need very specific training to continue improving. So the specificity thing, everybody looks at the exercise. And while there's nothing wrong with that, yes, you still should back squat, bench press, and deadlift. Even me as a conjugate person is not going to argue that. And anybody that's ever ran my programming knows that I'm not against that. But you also have to think about the specificity of how you're training those in terms of percentage of one rep max. You have to be able to do that, at least from the research perspective. We're going to continue to dive into here is at least touching 90% plus more of those movements on a weekly basis to be able to do that. But again, we kind of talked about the Bulgarians. How frequently can you do that with the same movement patterns? That's where we have to balance this, especially when it comes to athletic performance and strength conditioning, powerlifting, what have you. So from the comprehensive benefit side, we understand what happens. So now let's kind of talk about why you should care about it. Like, what are the actual benefits of incorporating max effort training? And benefit number one is going to be just maximal strength and development. This is pretty obvious, but obviously it's worth stating that if you want to be as strong as possible, max effort training, touching 90% loads on a consistent basis, is going to be non-negotiable. It's the most direct path to increasing your one rep max and any lift or exercise that you're trying to improve a one rep max on. Benefit number two is going to be improved rate of force development. So when you train with maximal loads, you're forced to drain as much force as possible as quickly as possible. And this improves your ability to produce force rapidly, which then carries over to athletic performance, explosiveness, and power output. And I know many people think about the dynamic effort side of this, but again, Louis always talked about force equals mass times acceleration. So being able to push that mass high during the max effort portion of that equation means the acceleration is going to be down. But mass and acceleration are still how you increase that force equation. So if you just never address the mass and only increase the acceleration portion, it's not going to be the same. And I know people will say, well, this isn't exactly a physics equation, but it is to some degree, because at the end of the day, strength training is just an expression of how much force you can generate. And we measure that by how much weight you can put on your back or in your hands or pick off the ground. That's just how we measure that amount of force. If we really wanted to compete in something else, then we can use force plates, right? And we can pick a sub-maximal load and see who can generate the most force that way. And we probably know that, hey, the one rep max may not necessarily be the best way to generate the most force. It's usually a mix and combination of finding a heavy enough load that we can move incredibly fast to get that peak velocity and force. But that's a topic for another day. But just so you know, you do see improved rate of force development from increasing your one rep max and your overall general strength. Benefit number three is going to be the psychological toughness. Now, here's something that people don't talk about enough. And this really, really irks me when it comes to people talking about powerlifting. You know, they don't like the conjugate method. They don't like the max effort-based method or a dynamic effort-based method because it's not specific enough. It doesn't give you enough practice. Here's the thing. Powerlifting is very, especially lifting one rep max or one rep max based weights, heavy singles. There is a psychological skill to doing that and doing it well. The strongest people, yes, are they strong? Absolutely. Are they neurologically efficient? Absolutely. Do they have a decent amount of muscle mass? Chances are, probably they do. Do they have good genetics? They probably do. However, the ones that really separate themselves from the pack are those with the psychological toughness aspect, having that mental component. Approaching a barbell loaded with 90, 95, 100, 105% of your max is intimidating, and it requires focus, confidence, and mental fortitude every single time you walk up to the bar, right? Because, I mean, not only can you risk getting injured, but just you know how it's going to feel. And depending upon how your body feels in the day, after you get to about 90%, any day can really be a miss. I mean, it takes a miss groove. It takes one small mistake for you to miss weights when you start getting that, especially when talking about people being really strong, squatting 5, 6, 7, 800, 900 pounds. Same thing with bench press, you know, benching 4, 5, 600 pounds, deadlifting 6, 7, 800 pounds. An inch makes a big difference of making and missing those lifts. And a lot of that is mental fortitude, especially also continuing to push the weight as you run into a sticking point. So regular exposure to these weights teaches you to handle the pressure, overcome fear, push through discomfort. And as Travis Mash has been quoted as saying, the max effort method provides a psychological benefit to becoming a great athlete that nothing else in the weight room can provide. That's pretty powerful stuff right there. And it's absolutely right. If we talk about, and especially with athletic performance, you talk about we're trying to build mental toughness. Mental toughness will come when you have to put 95 to 100% of your best lift you've ever done in your life on your back and your hands, right? Time does, as I like to say, time to nut up or shut up. And that's why the strength conditioning coaches at the high level in the collegiate realms really get kind of known as these guys that build, quote unquote, the culture. And I think some of that, to me, actually comes to how they work with those guys, the effort they put in, and their mental toughness. They would do whatever they go to do, testing and getting the room to hyped up. If you've been in those rooms, you know what that atmosphere is like, and it is second to none. Every time I'm around them, it makes me want to go lift and just put the heaviest weight I can on my hands because it really gets you amped up. And that's a psychological piece. And I think the max effort method is very forgotten about in terms of that aspect. As you can tell, I can go on about that for a long time. Benefit number four is going to be increased confidence under the load, kind of going back to the psychological piece. But every time you successfully complete a near maximum lift, you're actually proving to yourself that you're capable of probably more, especially if you take 95% and it feels great. Maybe it feels light. Maybe it felt easy. Maybe you're like, man, I was going to only make a 20-pound jump, but I'm for sure making a 30 to 35-pound jump, right? This builds self-efficacy and your belief in your ability to succeed consistently when you get underneath heavy loads. And that confidence translates to the competition, the platform, athletics, to life, and everything. It really does. And I'm a big believer, especially talking about powerlifting, that's quote unquote building positive momentum throughout the meet, getting that opener, getting that second attempt. You're now more mentally in the right spot to be able to make the third. If you make that third, then you go to bench press, hit your opener, crush your second. Man, you're riding high. You're going to crush that third. And then you go into deadlift, you crash your opener. You're going to feel like you're not going to miss whatever's put on the bar, right? That is huge, huge advantage. And that just goes for, again, anything, going back to this, anything in life in terms of building confidence from having those constant exposures and then also being able to say to yourself, hey, I can do more. I think that's kind of important. Number five is going to be the technical mastery at high intensity. And so you can have perfect technique at 50% of your max, but what happens when you put 90% on the bar? And this is, again, going back to the higher frequency based people and the DUP based training, and you know, there's nothing wrong with those systems, but it's an, oh, we're training grain quality movement patterns. Well, are you actually training with heavy enough loads that you're going to have to force yourself to maintain good technique, and or are you doing too much volume and getting close to failure at submaximal loads to where now you're ingraining bad movement patterns to be able to finish reps? And so that's when technique really matters, is when the bar gets heavy enough at 90% or more, and you find out if your movement patterns actually hold up under stress and under load. So max effort training forces you to maintain that technique under maximal load, which is exactly what you will need in competition from a powerlifting perspective. Maybe not so much in athletics, but definitely when it comes to taking any kind of one rep max in the weight room. There's also the time efficiency side. Now, this is a little bit of a caveat. I'll kind of go into this a little bit, but generally speaking, compared to higher volume-based training, max effort training and work can be relatively time efficient. You're doing lower reps with long rest periods, so sessions can be shorter while still providing a powerful stimulus. And that's looking at the main work. Okay, now obviously you got to factor in accessory and whatever, or if you've got equipment and gear, training partners, that all certainly comes in. And I mean, I remember my max effort lower body days with my crew in the garage taking a solid 2.5 to 3 hours. Sometimes I'm getting ready for a meet, those might be 4 hour days. We start training at 3, get done at like 6:30, 6:45, maybe 7 o'clock. Now that's 5-6 guys running off of one monolift, lots of weight change, lots of rack height changes because I'm 5 foot and the tallest person was like 6'3", 6'4". I mean, that all comes into factor, but you're talking about if you're mainly training with yourself or one or two other people and you're pretty efficient, it can be pretty quick. It really can. Assuming you're not getting into a different kind of parallel gear. And then benefit number 7 is going to be the injury prevention side. And I know many people are like, well, if I'm trying to max out all the time or lift really heavy, how's that going to help, you know, reduce injury risk? It does seem counterintuitive, but hear me out. When you actually get stronger, your tissues adapt to handle higher loads, and then you become more resilient. Stronger muscles, stronger tendons, connective tissue are more resilient to injury. We know that. We know that for a fact. So research on team sport athletes has shown that while very high training loads can increase injury risk, athletes with higher chronic training loads actually have a protective-based effect against injury. So in other words, if you systematically build up to the strength over time, who would have thought, that you're better prepared for the demands of your sport from getting the forces and the strength. And I do think there is a point of diminishing return. Like, and you can't max out all the time, but clearly a stronger and better built athlete, especially from an athletic performance perspective, is always going to be more injury resilient than those that does not have the muscle tissue. It's just, it's literal body armor on your arm, leg, back, shoulders, you get the idea. It's kind of why strength training, it's kind of got important nowadays, just to help keep athletes durable, especially with the issues of specialization. I'm not going to go into that on this podcast episode though. So I'm gonna be honest with you though, let's talk about some of the drawbacks of the risks. So we got to be real, at least, you know, I'm not gonna try to show my biases too much, but we're gonna talk about the real risks that you probably need to know about the max effort method. And so for now, it's incredibly effective, but again, it's not that it doesn't have its risks. So number one is going to be central nervous system fatigue. And to me, this is the big one, is that training at maximum intensities is taxing on your nervous system. We're not just talking about muscle fatigue. We're talking about neural fatigue that affects your entire body. So the symptoms that can include can be decreased motivation, just in anything, but especially training, decreased or poor sleep quality, elevated resting heart rate, decreased performance on all your other stuff, your accessory lifts, maybe your speed work, maybe your conditioning-based work, just see your performance decrease as a whole, your irritability, you got mood changes, you're having longer recovery times between sessions, you feel a little more banged up going into the next one every single time. And Louis Simmons noted that if you train the same lift at 90% or more for more than 3 weeks, your nervous system, your CNS gets negatively affected, and progress actually starts to go backwards. And this is why exercise rotation is so critical in the conjugate method. It's not about just always giving a different stimulus, but so that the CNS gets a different response, even though you're still pushing the intensity high, but it's a more novel-based stimulus. It's not the same thing over and over and over again. It's going to work clearly different muscles and how you load the body. That all is going to affect how your CNS reacts to that training stress. Risk number two is then going to be the injury potential. Now, ironically enough, we just talked about the injury prevention side, but let's not sugarcoat the whole thing, is that when you lift maximal weights, it obviously is going to carry an inherent injury risk. But just anything you do in the weight room is going to carry some kind of an injury risk. But when you're at or near your one rep max limit, several things can obviously happen. You can have technique breakdown under extreme load, so that could put you in issues of low back, hip, shoulder issues, right? Possibly tearing things, like acute injuries from strains and tears. Definitely more likely if you make really dumb jumps, you're not warmed up well, you know, you don't make smart training decisions in the weight room, you're more likely to have those issues. Joint stress, potential injury there. Again, the repetitive nature of doing certain things generally causes more issues when it comes to like actual joint issues, when it comes about elbows and shoulders and knees and hips. But again, a squat is still a squat, whether you're doing a safety bar or a high bar or a low bar or a box squat or a wide stance or a close stance, you're still squatting. Your hip musculature is still working. Your knees are still bending. Still having that load compress your spine, that still happens. So there's still some obvious potential injury there. There always will be. And then overuse injuries from inadequate recovery. And again, this is more so, again, because of the inadequate recovery, not getting enough sleep, not getting enough hydration, not enough protein, not enough calories to recover. You know, if you're not doing those things, that's going to immediately hurt you even more, having an overuse and not just being able to recover from your training just in general, regardless of how you train. But when you're constantly training at or above 90%, more likely going to impact you there. Now, research by Pelopin acknowledged that training at 90% or higher carries the highest risk of injury, which is why he created the volume guidelines to minimize that risk. So Pelopin's chart really came in to try to minimize injury risk and found that that would be a good guideline. I agree. I do think that's a very good rough place for most people to start. It's usually where I try to start whenever I start looking at my sets and reps, how many total reps am I getting in? And how is the athlete going to be able to recover from that? And if they're recovering better, you know, the younger, whatever, we can maybe push that volume a little higher, especially in off-season based work. But as in-season work comes in, then we try to keep it more at the minimal side. We do the bare minimum that we can to continue to make progress and keep the athlete ready or the powerlifter ready. That said, and I do think this is important, research on resistance training injuries show that when performed with proper supervision, technique, programming, injury rates are actually low. And we know this in strength conditioning, that if you've got all the right stuff, the right coaching, the right technique, the right programming, right in-game decisions, or in right in-weight room decisions, however you want to call that, making smart decisions in the weight room with the right people around you, that your injury rates are pretty damn low. And so one study even found the injury rates of only 0.055 to 0.176 per 100 participant hours in supervised settings. So those are incredibly low, especially when you start looking at things like football, basketball, soccer. Like, this is much lower than that. So something to at least consider there. Now, and they obviously practice more consistently, so you're going to more likely see those injuries as well, too, because you're subjecting yourself to them. Risk number three is going to be the overtraining and recovery issues. I've already kind of tapped on this, but max overtraining demands some pretty serious recovery. If you're maxing out too frequently with inadequate rest, you're going to dig yourself into a big hole or ditch. And those signs of the overtraining, again, persistent muscle soreness, elevated resting heart rate, hormonal disturbances, decreased immune function, chronic fatigue, high blood pressure, loss of strength and performance. If you're seeing these things, you're probably overtraining to some degree, or having issues with your recovery. So that's where a deload might be important, getting more water, more sleep, more food, more active recovery-based work to be able to get yourself out of that ditch. And the best way to avoid this is to not get in the ditch in the first place. Be as preventative as you can with all those little things whenever you are not only just using the max effort method, but just training in general, but especially if you're going to use more max effort based methods, especially on a conjugate system, that's going to be crucial from a recovery standpoint. Risk number four is going to be psychological burnout. So constantly going into the gym every single week, basically maxing out or near it, can get mentally exhausting. Not every session is going to feel good, and missing lifts can be pretty demoralizing, pretty humbling, you know, very frustrating if you don't have the right mindset and it is a rough day. And this is where auto-regulation is key. The key aspect of the max effort method is to take what you're given for the day. Do not try to take a square object and pound it through a round hole. It will not fit. It will not work. You're going to do yourself way more harm than good. If you get to, say, what's normally like 85%, and that feels like 95% for the day, maybe you make one tiny jump just to test it up a little more, see if things turn on, see if things happen, and then you call it. Yeah, there's really no reason to push further. You're not going to have PR days every single day. That's just the way the max effort method works. It's just, it's very readiness dependent, and it's something that is very possible, but also the psychological side of having to walk in every single day with that. You know, you're just going to have bad days when you walk in. You may have a bad day at work, bad experience relationship-wise, work-wise, who knows? That all will affect your training from a psychological perspective when it takes heavy weights. Fifth risk is going to be seeing technical regression. So if you're chasing PRs, excuse me, I'm sorry about that. If you're chasing PRs at the expense of your technique, you're setting yourself up for problems, because lifting with piss poor form and technique under those maximal loads is a recipe for injury and will limit your long-term progress. So iron that stuff out as early as you can, because trying to fix it later is much more challenging, because not only have to worry about the neurological side of how it's ingrained, then we got to address muscular issues and, you know, biomechanical based issues. And there's a whole host of things that you may have to fix, where if you can get this down early, go to more technical failure early on, implementing max effort method. And then as you get stronger, then you can begin to test those limits, and you're going to have some breakdown. It's going to happen. It just has to be within reason, and make sure obviously that you're staying safe. And that it's something that if you're able to add weight based on how it feels, if you add weight, is the technique going to get worse? And for me, that's kind of where I draw the line, at least for myself. I did whenever I competed, was if I add this extra 10, 20 pounds, is my technique going to get worse? If I feel this is going to get worse, we just call it. If I feel, hey, I can keep my technique pretty much the same, it's still not going to be perfect, but it's going to be damn close. It's going to be some minor breakdown, but I'm still going to be able to move the weight, and I'm still going to be able to address my weaknesses, then it's worth considering. Something to think about there. Sixth risk is going to be the Bulgarian problem. Okay, so we talked about the Bulgarian weightlifters, and they produced Olympic champions, but they had massive dropout rates. Many athletes could not sustain the physical, emotional, psychological-based stress of maxing out multiple times per day, every single day. So unless you're a full-time professional athlete with perfect recovery conditions, and honestly, even then, that level of max effort volume is unsustainable and dangerous. So you should not be trying to do that. I just want to make sure that's very, very clear, that you should not be trying to take a Bulgarian-based system and shove it in here where you're maxing out several times a day. So people that need to be kind of cautious with the max effort method here, I think should be, again, cautious slash getting second opinions and or outsourcing some kind of help would be one, beginner. So those with less than 1 to 2 years of experience, any kind of athletes with any kind of injury-based history, those with really poor movement patterns or technique, your athletes, like really talking about youth athletes here, and anybody with any kind of cardiovascular concern, because we do know that maximal effort training can spike blood pressure pretty significantly. And if you've got some major heart issues, not worth it. Get that figured out first. Get your blood pressure checked out. Get that taken care of. Always important, regardless of what your training goals are, honestly. So the bottom line on the risk, though, is that here's my take. Yes, max effort training is going to carry its own risks, but so does obviously football and martial arts and wrestling and basketball, running marathons. Those all have their own risks too. So the key is intelligent implementation. And with the right programming, the right exercise selection, the right technique, the right coaching, the right recovery management, the risk can all be super minimalized while you can still get all the great benefits from it. So just like with anything else from a training perspective, implementation is going to be kind of the big thing here when it comes to the risk aspect of max effort training. And you are going to have to start somewhere. So just making sure that you have a good plan of how you're going to implement that as well into your training. But again, regardless if you're talking about using the Conjugate system or a different training system altogether, max effort training can be implemented in any of those. So how can you do this correctly? And so if you're convinced that using max effort training has a place in your program, how do you implement it without destroying your body, seeing benefits, and maximizing as much as you possibly can from it? So the first principle I have here is that you need to build your base first. And this is very Conjugate-y, very West Side-y, very Louis Simmons-y, however you want to look at it. But if you are a beginner to intermediate, and by that I mean like 1 to 2 years of consistent structured strength training, you probably shouldn't be doing true max effort work yet. So love the enthusiasm, but I think building that base first is the most important thing. Because your technique isn't quite ingrained yet, your work capacity isn't developed yet, and your tissues aren't adapted to handle the maximal loads safely, consistently. It's not that you can't do a one rep max. Can you do, if we take the Conjugate system, for example, can you max out on a squat, deadlift, basically a squat and or deadlift and a bench press variation 50 weeks out of the year? We'll say you have 2 weeks of down weeks out of the year. Can you do 50 variations or 50 max effort lifts on all those without feeling like your body's absolutely crushed, right? And without piss poor movement patterns and what have you. If you can't, then we need to kind of build your base. And that's where I think volume, general strength training, 5x5, 3x5, 5x3, those are all fantastic ways. Just build general strength, improve your movement capacities, improve the way that you understand how to train. And that way, when you get to these more advanced training methods like the Conjugate system or implementing more max effort based training, you're actually ready for it. So you can spend those first 6 to 12 months or even longer, obviously building your technical proficiency with the lighter loads, staying in that more 70 to 85% range, focusing on, again, sets of 3 to 5 with great technique and building that up over time. And then that will build that base and that foundation for you. And unless you also do hammer more accessory exercises, build more muscle tissue, it's really almost just a long-term athletic development model-based plan for being able to get into more consistent, heavier weights. All right, the second principle is going to be exercise rotation is going to be key. This is where everybody hates on the Conjugate system, and in my opinion, it also kind of makes or breaks how well the Conjugate system works for you, because understanding how you actually manipulate your max effort variations. So this is where West Side tend to excel, is because Louis was calling the shots. Louis was the mad scientist, and Louis knew what the hell he was doing. And that's why they saw so much progress. Yes, you can argue performance-enhancing drugs, equipment, all that kind of stuff. They're just massive dudes. But here's the thing. Louis produced results. He may have got the craziest freaking guys he could find, but he got the results, and he was the mad scientist, and he knew what he was doing. So instead of maxing out on his compensation squat every week, he rotated through different variations. So I'm going to list some stuff off here. Obviously, there's more to it than just this. But from a lower body max effort side, you get different box squats, different heights, different bars that you can use, as well as that, obviously, safety squat bar, front squat variations, deadlift variations, mixing up your stances. So sumo, conventional, deficit, rack pulls, block pulls against bands, chains, all that kind of stuff. Good morning variations, and even belt squats. Okay, so let's give you some idea from some lower body perspective. And then I've seen that bands and chains to all that as well. For the max effort side, on the upper body side, you're talking about your normal bench press, close grip variations, floor press variations, incline press, board presses, overhead press, adding bands, chains, Spoto, Larson, you know, any of those Swiss bars. Those are all fantastic things that you can use. And the rotation of exercises like this prevents the accommodation or your body adapting to the same stimulus consistently and reduces injury risk by distributing stress differently over the joints and range of motion and what you're using differently over the course of those training cycles. Now, how often should you rotate? Going to be a little bit dependent upon where you're at. So advanced lifters, usually you can get away with a weekly or biweekly or going with an A and B based variation. You can do that for maybe like two cycles. So for example, if we're looking at squat, you might have a front squat variation week A and a low close stance box squat with safety bar on week two or week B. And you alternate back and forth, say for the month, and you try to break each record from there. And then you pick new exercises depending upon what you're seeing when you've developed, or you can even run it longer. So different ways you could go there, or you can just switch your variation up every single week. For that, I recommend that you have a history of max effort exercises already compiled. You know what your bests are. You know what your what Dave Tate like to call as your testers and your builders. And you sprinkle in testers, but primarily stick with builders because you know they're going to drive it up. And you use a tester to be able to determine, is what I'm doing working without actually having to do the competition lift? Although I still recommend doing the competition lift semi-frequently, even with a normal conjugate system. Then we go to the intermediate lifters, rotating every 2 to 4 weeks. So you can run the same exercise again for like week one, week two, maybe week three, and then you run up the exercise. One of my favorite things to do with this level of athletes, especially we're talking about performance-based, but is to work up to a 5 rep max, a 3 rep max, and then a 1 rep max. So you're going to increase the load over the course of 3 weeks, but it's because you're also pushing your rep maximum. So the 5 RM week is basically almost like a practice week. You're really not going to have an idea where you're at, but you're going to do quite a bit of reps of that movement pattern. You're going to get a lot of good practice with it. You're going to have a gauge of where you're at. You may not have a true 5 rep max. You're just going to be close. The following week, you got a 3 RM. You already got a gauge. You know what number you need to get over. How much can I push that? And then after that 3 rep max, now you got an idea. 3 rep max is usually right around 90%, 92% if you really actually push it. So that can give you an estimate of what you want to go for on that 1 rep max, if not try to do more than that. And then that will let you know if you kind of made progress over the course of that 3 week cycle. One of the things I really like for intermittent lifters, but really you can do it every 2 to 4 weeks. Beginners, you should stick with the same variations pretty much monthly for at least a month and then change when progress stalls. And even though the max effort method is really talking about, to some degree, mixing up the variations to be able to see progress, for beginners, getting lots of progress with that variation can be incredibly important if we're talking about using a different bar or a different stance or a box height, you know, sprinkling that in. So for beginners, again, this goes back to like that initial thing that we talked about was them getting the general strength built first. That's what I would do, but you can still do that, say 5x5 for a month of a safety squat bar squat, get better at that for a month, learn the bar, rotate the exercise, 5x5 with a different exercise, rotate that, do that every month, and you can come back to different variations to be able to come back and see, hey, are those getting better, and then you can track your progress, and then you can get up into that intermediate level. So hopefully that kind of makes sense of how you can build into that intermediate to advanced if you happen to be a beginner. Third principle is the volume and frequency guidelines. Go based off Pelton's chart and research to start and then adjust from there. You can just do a simple Google search. I don't have it pulled up here on my screen, but I just know that 90% one, like pretty consistently, that is always 4 to 10. So about 7 reps is the ideal. That one's one that I know because I've used the conjugate method for so long. Now, the weekly frequency, recommend 1 to 2 max effort sessions per week, ideally 1 upper and 1 lower. However, if you've ever followed any of my conjugate work, whenever I was doing it, I would do some max effort pulls on my dynamic day. So there would be a week, every other week, where I would have a max effort squat, a max effort bench press, and then when dynamic day came, I would have a max effort pull. And that I found that I was able to recover my deadlift much better by only deadlifting heavy every other week and putting it there. And I would have the longest amount of recovery from Tuesday to Saturday for my lower body days. So my deadlift ideally would not affect my squat day as much as my squat potentially affects my deadlift. So again, just a personal experience. So you can get away with doing that. But if you're going to max out on a squat, a bench press, and a deadlift variation every single week, you will want to be very methodical about how you choose to do that and how you're going to lay them out. And ideally, when you're doing the upper and the lower, you're going to have at least 72 hours between max effort sessions for the same muscle groups. So again, kind of going back, if you do choose to do that squat and deadlift, you at minimum want 72 hours between to try to allow the most amount of recovery that you can. So for me, that was Saturday and Tuesdays for my training days. So that's how I kind of got around that. Obviously, you can pick whatever days of the week you want, but just a guideline of what you should try to go for from a recovery standpoint. The volume per session, you're going to work up to one top set of 1 to 3 reps at 90% plus. That's basically going to take care of everything you need to know. But your total reps at 90% plus should be between 4 and 10 lifts at the absolute maximum with back to pelvis chart. So that's why I always like, if you have an idea of where you're at, figuring out that 90% range and always taking 90% for a single, that being one rep, and then that gives you a gauge of what you're going to do for the day. You can either stay there for a triple, you can go up a little bit for a double, take some singles and work up. Use that as like your gauge and monitor. You should theoretically, on almost any given day, if it's a true 90%, you can probably walk into the gym any day and hit your 90% for at least one rep. That's usually why I like it as a guideline and a gauge-based percentage to go off of from a max effort side. And then your warm-up sets clearly don't count towards this total. So like doing 50, 60, 70, 75, 80% to build in doesn't count towards that because you're basically just building up. But as you're building up, you want to do that methodically. So from a example, max effort lower body session to warm up, let's say you go the empty bar for 5 reps, you're going to go 135 for 5 reps, you're going to do 225 for 5 reps, really just kind of build into that. And then you go 275 for like a triple, 315 for a double, 365 for a single, you go to 405 for a single, and then you go up to 445 for a single, which is about 90% for you. That's going to be your first working set. Give you an idea where you're at. You can say, okay, well, I'm going to go to 455 for a PR, or 455 for a single, I'm sorry, hit that. Then I'm going to go up to maybe 465 for a single, take that. Then I'm going to go to 475 for a single, take that. So we got 445, 455, 465, 475. That puts me at 4 singles right there at the minimum that I needed. And if we think that 485 is around my max or was my max, then I can go 485, 490, and I hit that PR, I can call it a day. Or I can go to 485, 480. That's all I felt that was there for the day. Then you don't hit a PR, but you got your 4 reps in, right? So it gives you an idea of how you can kind of build into that if you have an idea of where you're going. It's the complicated piece of figuring out, if you've not done the variation, what's 90%. In that case, my guess is to go like plate quarter up till it starts to feel heavy with singles, and then add 10, 20, 30 pounds of jump and really try to get as close as you can to push that single to where you've got about maybe 10 to 20 pounds left in you and calling it there. And then you can say, okay, what was 90% of that? Backtrack, how many reps did you get? That'd be a good way to just backtrack and figure out where you're at. And that gives you the 90% number that you need for a future cycle whenever you go back through that variation. All right. Principle number 4 is going to be knowing when to shut it down. And this is crucial. Cannot explain this enough. Just because you can try another PR doesn't mean that you should try another PR. Anybody knows me knows I'm a big fan of the 2 PR rule, which means you should never hit more than 2 PRs in any given session. So going back to that squat example that we used, well, let's say the 485 was our old PR, and we go up and we take 490 and we crush it. Is this the day we're going to take 500? Well, I'm not sure. I kind of would just like to have those 545 pound plates on there. So you go to 495, take a single, crush it. Stop right there. Do not take the next single. Just look at the back history of how you warmed up. You're probably around that 6, 7, 8 repetitions that you've taken at 90% or above. We talked about mitigating risk, mitigating injury. I have seen it all too often where there's nothing to gain to go for a third PR. And in more cases than not, I can't even think of a time where I've seen an athlete or myself or a lifter go for 3 PRs in one day and come out successful. You're probably going to miss that third rep 95% of the time or more. Unless you are just ungodly stronger than what you were, you know, last time. You know, it's one thing if your max effort PR was 485 and now you're squatting 600. Okay, well, if you then go 490, 495, 500, yeah, you can have 3, but you're not even in the 90% range. So you see how that works out. So again, 2 PR rule, don't break that rule. Just use that as a good guideline. I promise it will not steer you wrong. It always worked well for me and all the athletes and lifters that I've worked with. Now, another reason you should stop is if your bar speed significantly decreases, say you make a jump and it just feels heavy as shit, shut it down there. Don't even try to push it anymore. Don't worry about it. Call it there for a day. Come back and fight another day. Not that big of a deal. If your technique starts to severely break down, a little bit of breakdown again, okay. Big breakdown, shut it down there. If you're feeling joint pain, discomfort, something just feels off in your shoulders, your back, your hips, your knee, once you get past that 90% range, don't even bother trying to work it out, or if I put a little bit of weight on, maybe it'll feel better. Don't deal with that, but also be aware of those warning signs as you're warming up. Obviously pretty obvious, but you'd be amazed when people say, oh, my knee's bothering me today at 50%. And we'll see if I keep working up, what happens. Typically, if it's not good at 50%, it's probably not going to be better at 90%. Just being honest. Also, if you walk in, mental confidence not there for the day. That's okay. Just make the best what you can, but do not force it. Do not try to go chase a PR if you do not feel it's there. Just get up to your heavy single, double, triple for the day. Call it a day, hit some likes after work, and get out. Or if you've already hit that, again, going back to that small rep weight PR, for many people, just chipping it is enough. That's why I like the 2PR rule, because if you smoke it, I do think it's a not bad idea to take one more to try to really make sure it's there, get an extra rep of those heavier weights. But if you hit a small rep PR, in most cases than not, take the win for the day and just move on to the next step. Missing a lift in training also serves no purpose, okay? The goal behind max effort training is to not get it so heavy that you actually miss the lift. It will happen. You will make some bad judgment calls. It's just inevitable. It's how training works just in general, regardless of whether you're talking about max effort training or any other kind of training system. You're going to miss reps and have failure at times. But you want to do your best to make smart jumps and leave a little bit of weight in the tank if you are ever in doubt. You know, only if you have spotters, the atmosphere is right, do you really may try to nut up and try to go for something that might be a little bit more risky than you normally would. Trying to make smart decisions, listen to the fatigue in your body. You know, another thing I talk about too with younger athletes is when I'm talking about we're making weight decisions, I try to say, hey, I try to think of something that's heavier than they might think. So like say they're doing like a front squat at like 185. And I think for sure they're good for 205. But I know they're probably not good for 225. So let's just kind of see what happens. So hey, you want to jump to 205 or 225? And they're like, nah. Okay, well, then we're probably going to go like 195 to 205. That's it. You know, that's what you're going to put on the bar. You're not – if there's hesitation, I mean, even a split-second hesitation, when someone says, hey, would you take blank weight? If it's not, yeah, let's do it. You know, it is a hesitation of, maybe, nope. It's not the weight. Do not take it. Just move on. It'll be done for the day, or take that very, very small jump if there's one available that you do feel super confident on. But that's another litmus test that you can give yourself, is ask yourself the question, am I ready for it? All right. Principle 5 is going to be using velocity-based training. Optional, but clearly we have the technology, so we might as well use it if you have it. But modern technology like the velocity trackers can help you stay safe, but also make better weight decisions. If your bar speed drops below a certain threshold, typically for max effort training, it's going to be 0.3 meters per second for squats. That's your sign to stop. Even for bench press, that like 0.3, 0.2 on the deadlift, I think you can kind of push a little bit more, because sometimes deadlifts can get really slow when you get around that knee level. But you know, that's a good way to judge it. Now, you still have to be applying maximum force and effort into the barbell, so if you're kind of sandbagging it, then that kind of hurts. But also, I know there's people that can misgroove it, and that can throw off your velocity that you're getting from your VBT device, so that's also something worth considering. But the goal is to try to remove some of the guesswork, and you let technology and science make some decisions for you. So if you want to use a velocity tracker, I don't think it's a bad idea. I've had athletes use it to judge their weights on their heavy like doubles and triples in the strength conditioning room, and I've seen pretty good success of figuring out what's going to be their top sets for the day. The sixth principle is going to be integrating your max effort method with the other training methods. I think that's the best way to do it. Again, there's other ways you can do it, but obviously having your max effort days, your dynamic effort days, and then your repetition effort work in there, and or GPP and conditioning days in there as well to promote recovery, extra work capacity, all awesome. And that should, you know, your repetition work and your accessory work should always be going after your weak points and building muscle, and your dynamic effort days focusing on being like 55% range once you factor in combining resistance and all that kind of stuff, focusing on just bar speed. And then your normal example weekly schedule using the conjugate system, if you were to do this, would be your max effort lower day could be a Monday. Your max effort upper body day could be a Tuesday. Ideally, if I'm being honest, you would want to split in between those. Ideally, you go Monday, Wednesday. But if we're looking at trying to fit this in through a normal Monday through Friday week for the average person who you're not training on the weekends, then you have your max effort lower on Monday, max effort upper on Tuesday, and then you do your dynamic effort lower on Thursday and your dynamic effort upper on Friday. When I always trained, I had my lower body and upper body together back-to-back as well, and that was mainly because I wanted to be able to train with my training partners, so we would do max effort lower body on Saturday evenings, afternoons, I guess, max effort upper body days in the morning on Sundays, Monday would be off, Tuesday would be dynamic effort day, and the lower, and Thursday would be dynamic effort day for the upper, and if they were able to come train with me during the week, awesome. If not, they would do stuff on their own and I would kind of counsel them. So that's what always worked well for me, but you know, you can adjust that, but that would be the ideal way to lay out your conjugate style method if you're using max effort method within that system. And then seventh principle is going to be your periodization. So if you like the max effort work, but you probably shouldn't do it year round at the same intensity, so consider different seasonalities. So in the off season, you can do less actual max effort work, focus on a lower hypertrophy, lower work capacity, maybe even a little bit of specificity for technique sucks. You could also use different specialty bars and do different rep range maxes. So I like doing hard sets of 6, 8, 5s during the off season with different specialty bars, still work on the patterns, but overall just try to build some lean tissue going into competition-based phases. So like your pre-competition, the prep before the prep, more frequent max effort work, testing some different variations, trying to figure out what might be actually leading you into some progress, build some more actual general strength, but actually be in the strength sets and reps of the max effort side. And then obviously going into the meet, so your normal meet prep, much more max effort work, getting closer towards specificity, more straight bar work, more full range of motion work, and then you hone in, use the max effort lifts that you know that drive your squat, your bench press, your deadlift, overhead press, whatever, drive them going into the meet, finish off with some specificity based work that lasts like month, deload, and then go into the meet. In deloads, there you should get deloads by having different variations involved that will provide a natural deload, but if you do feel like you want like an actual deload during your max effort weeks, I recommend taking them every 6 to 10 weeks. I think it's kind of a sweet spot. I think trying to do them too frequently, every 3 to 4, is too frequent. I think if you don't feel that you can recover from your max effort work the way that you need to within a, you got to do it every month, I think you need to look at your conditioning and your recovery first and foremost before you should be able to take your max effort work again 6 to 10 weeks pretty consistently without having to have a deload if your training is laid out correctly. The eighth principle is going to be mastering your fundamentals. So before you add your advanced variations, get really good at the normal straight bar variations. So your squat, your bench press, and your deadlift. When it comes to your deadlift, your sumo and your conventional, so whichever way you pull, test your other one. Use that as a max effort variation. You have some of your overhead press. You have your close grip bench press, your floor press. On your back squat, you got a high bar, a low bar, a box squat, a front squat, a pawn squat, right? Those are all different squat variations that require no extra special equipment, just a regular barbell. And then your overhead press, if you want to mix that in with the bench press, you could also add in Larson, you could add in Spoto, you could add in incline, you could add in some shoulder saver work. Those are other variations that you can use as well. Again, just going to use a straight bar that would be very easy to implement, and you can rotate through those exercise variations pretty consistently. Now, going to special populations, modifications for them. So not everyone should approach the max effort training method with the same way. So let's kind of talk about how I would modify things for certain people. Obviously for powerlifters, I think the max effort training based method is pretty essential. You compete with one rep max, lifts and one rep max on your squat bench deadlift. So you should be able to do those pretty consistently, in my opinion. And so that's why I think the conjugate system is, again, I'm being biased, but that's why I think it's more ideal for powerlifting, especially with the waves, the dynamic effort, and all the science. I think it just all works. It worked really well for me. It works well for me. The clients that I use that are willing to take the max effort method, the effort method, and the repetition effort method, and apply it through the conjugate system, it has always worked for everyone that I've used it for that actually follows it to a T and actually buys into it. For Olympic weightlifters, again, they also max out pretty frequently. Most people know they got Big Lift Friday, where they usually take their big singles on Fridays for snatch, clean, and jerk. But you can do additional max effort work on like your squats and your pulls. But you want to make sure you don't overstress yourself there from a nervous system perspective. So you consider using 85-90% as your threshold rather than a true 100% max on things like your squats and your pulls, so that you can focus your heavier work more so on your actual technical lifts when you go to do those big lift Fridays. And for your team sport athletes, I think the max effort work should be more conservative, training more of that 85-90% range. I really like I said, the 3-5 rep maxes for those, building into some doubles, triples, and singles throughout the year, though, but never to like a true 100% max. I can go on for days about why I think the one rep max for athletes is a complete waste of time, from like a testing perspective of like, you know, oh, we got max out week. I think that's stupid. But I do think using the max effort method with methodical based approaches is actually pretty intelligent. And then with those athletes, we can actually rotate the exercises pretty frequently because, again, strength training is general for them. It's general physical preparation. It is not specific towards the sport. We can pick things that can help their squat improve, help their bench press improve, help their deadlift improve for sure. But again, remember, the goal is just to strain and get maximally stronger on different lifts. And then we would definitely want to use more of the off season for the actual really heavy max effort blocks. And then during in season, maintain those max efforts, maybe staying that 80, 85, maybe get up into the 90% range occasionally, chipping away at it every couple of weeks, but we don't need to get really over 95% with athletics during in season. I think that's the risk reward to me is not there. Just keep the loads heavy enough to keep them at a good place. And then we'll push hard again once season is over. We want to maximize the recovery, make sure they're still ready for their sport and aid their performance. If we get a little stronger, that's great, but we're not going to try to push the max effort side of things in season, in my opinion. And then prioritizing, obviously, injury prevention over the absolute strength numbers, making smart weight decisions, making smart exercise selections, and understanding that, again, strength training is a means to an end for these people, in these populations. It's not about being a bigger and better powerlifter. So definitely in doubt on the athletic side. Really shut it down early when it comes to making those decisions. Now, for CrossFit athletes, I think the sport demand is already high on the central nervous system output with all the Metcons they do, the competitions they do. They'll max out pretty consistently. I think they should limit their true max effort work to about one day per week and focus more on that 83, maybe 80 to 90% range, maybe get into the 92, 93, 94, 95% range occasionally, but staying more in the high 80s to low 90 range on their max effort work. And then considering using like every minute on the minutes with heavy singles in that like 80, 85% range instead of grinding out absolute maxes, that should be heavy enough to allow them to work on some technical work, also build up their strength endurance, which would be a little more specific towards their tasks. But I do think you still want to touch main actual max effort movement at least once a week. You can just rotate it around, or maybe even go with like an every 8 to 10 day training cycle versus doing like a 7 day a week thing. And that can spread things out a little bit as well. And then just for the average person to strength train, trying to get strong as shit, and trying to improve your general strength, health, and fitness, I think true max effort work doesn't have to be necessary. I think it's going to be one of those things if you want to do it. I still think that majority of your strength training should be in that 75 to 85% range for majority of work, your accessory work, you know, obviously being lighter, but when we're talking about your barbell-based lifts, like your squat, bench press, and deadlift variations, and the rep press variations, if you're using a barbell, should be in that 75% to 85% range for hard sets of like 5 to 8. I think that does a great job of checking a lot of boxes for that population. And then, you know, you can sprinkle in some hard sets of 3 to 5s throughout the year, especially if they happen to be interested in it. I think it's not a bad idea. But plenty of strength work with optimal recovery demands would be ideal for them. And then we start talking about older adults and populations, those well over 40 plus, I still think it's incredibly valuable. They learn how to strength train heavy. But again, I think it's, again, coming back to a personal preference. I think you want to make sure they've got better quality warm-ups, maybe more RPE-based training rather than looking at, hey, where are we at with percentages from what we've done last? Work up to hard sets of RPE 8 to 8.5 pretty consistently on their main movements of hard sets of 3 to 5. And I think that's going to check majority of those boxes for those people. You can rotate the exercises more frequently, give them new exposures, let them have fun with stuff, see how things feel, learn new exercises once they've obviously been comfortable being in the strength conditioning room, and then allow more recovery time between their sessions. So, you know, they can train 3 days a week, basically doing a max effort session every fourth day. I think that would be ample. So if you have a max effort session on Monday, Wednesday and Thursday, or Wednesday and Friday can just be normal strength training days, maybe some chin-ups, maybe some bench press for volume and reps. Come back on that Monday, still doing that same thing, and now Wednesday is now your max effort day. Your max effort day is just going to move basically to the every fourth training session. That's going to allow more recovery. That has worked really well for the older populations that I've used Conjugate with, spreading things out with the max effort side to be able to allow for that optimal recovery for them. Now, what I'm really pumped about with this episode, if you made it the full 1 hour and 10 minutes of me talking about the max effort method, we've covered a lot of ground, the science, benefit, risks, how to implement all the max effort training intelligently into your training programs. But I know some of you are thinking, this is a lot of information, but I need a plan, right? I need a program that I can follow. I need somewhere I can start. This was just a lot of information. This is all new to me. Having guidance can be very helpful to get you get going. Obviously, I can spoon feed you all the information through the audio podcast or on YouTube if you haven't been watching. But getting a plan, a program, makes it so much easier, especially if you're experienced in strength and conditioning and or powerlifting. And that's exactly why I created my ebook, Max Effort Training, the Complete Guide. Completely new, just launched this week. And this book is not based on just theory alone. It's comprehensive, practical resource designed to take everything that we've talked about in today's podcast episode. Not that I built the book around the podcast. I actually made the podcast episode to, yes, promote my book, but to be able to say, hey, there is an actual resource out there now for this, because as I scour the internet, outside of Louis Simmons's West Side Barbell Book of Methods, there's not really any true resource out there that's just focusing on the max effort method and how to implement it. So I put everything I could into that book to be able to help people with the max effort method. I thought it was a great place to start for me doing any kind of publication-based work. I say publication is just an ebook that I made. But, you know, I took the time to write it and edit it and send it to some people that I really trust, have them look over it, give me some feedback, read it, let me know what they think. Is it sufficient enough? Is it too basic? Is it too advanced? Right. I really got some good quality, honest opinions from people that I trust. They've done some good things for me. And so I'm really pumped to have this ebook out. And in this ebook, you're going to get 12 comprehensive chapters. It's going to give you deep dives into the science and the physiology. We kind of talked about some of that today, but I'm going to dive a little bit deeper in the book into that. So if you're into that kind of stuff, you really want to understand the science and physiology, it's going to be there. It's going to give you exercise selection and rotation strategies. You're going to get detailed programming principles, periodization models, recovery and injury prevention protocols. Kind of talked about that stuff today, but that's going to be in there as well. It's a little more specifics to what kind of worked well for me, kind of what I recommend, what the science says. And then you're going to get much, much more in there. But here's what I think is the best part. And good friend Lucas White said that he absolutely loved the book. But to him, the best thing were the 12-week max effort training plans that are in the back of the book. He said those were absolutely gold. Absolutely gold. Because what I took the time to do was put, yes, 12-week max effort training rotations. That's over 2 years of programming. I put them in the back of the book based on specific weaknesses of each lift. So I focused on 3 weaknesses of the squat, 3 weaknesses of the bench press, 3 weaknesses of the deadlift, gave you the whole 12 weeks to retest at the end, and you can see your progress. Whole max effort work is completely there. So they're designed for the different experience levels as well. So like you can kind of look through them and see, hey, I can see that this looks a little bit more advanced. Also, so you can adjust it to where you can have If you don't have certain equipment or whatever, you're going to be able to adjust it if you really need to. And really, at the end of the day, if you pick up the book and you've got a gym question, you just ask me. I'd be more than happy to answer as well. Same this video, if you're listening over on YouTube, just leave a comment if you got a question. I'd be more than happy to answer for you. But there's more like beginner-based information, kind of like I talked about the Danes podcast, and then the intermediate and advanced aspects of it. You can take that away from how we cycle the exercises. That's all covered. Obviously, we talk a little bit about how it's implemented with Westside, how you can implement different single leg variations as well in terms of athletic performance, and even more specialized aspects from it. And again, this book is over 10,000 words of detailed content. Everything, and I've really tried to say everything. I try to leave no stone unturned. Everything that you need to safely and effectively implement conjugate max effort based training in your training regime. Again, you don't have to do the max or do the conjugate system, but it's where the max effort method really got its home and popularity from was from the conjugate system, and everything that I've learned from directly Louis Simmons, Dave Tate, and even some of the texts we talked about here in this episode. So whether you're a powerlifter just looking to break through a plateau, you're an athlete wanting to increase your general strength, you're a serious lifter that just wants to understand the nuances of heavy lifting and how to maybe implement this into your training, this guide is going to have everything covered for you. And here's the best part. The programs are literally plug and play ready. I'm not joking. You can literally pick up that book, flip to the back, go to week one. Next week when you start your training on your max effort phase, you can literally pick a squat, bench press, or deadlift variation from the week one and immediately go. And I guarantee you in 12 weeks, you're going to see progress. You don't have to do about the sets, the reps, the exercise selection there, when to rotate the movements. It's all laid out for you week by week, 12 weeks at a time for each specific weakness. So you can grab your copy right now at the link in my bio. I'm also going to link it in the description box below if you're listening over on YouTube. It's also going to be in the show notes as well. If you haven't been listed on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, or anywhere else that you enjoy your podcast, I have it linked down there as well. So trust me, if you're serious about getting stronger, this is an investment in your training that will pay dividends for years to come. As I mentioned, it's literally got 2 years of programming in it on there. To make it even better, I've gone as far as this week only, launch week. So if you're listening to this podcast after November 3rd, it's too late. So if you pick this up before November 3rd, 2025, it's on sale right now for $47. It's normally listed at $87. So after November 3rd, it will go back up to $87. So I'm taking $40 off. You don't have to enter any coupon code for that or anything. It's already got the $40 discounted off. Now, if you're listening to the podcast episode, I've done this on social media as well. You had to comment, but if you're listening to the podcast episode, if you enter Max Effort 5, that's MAXEFFORT, and the number 5 in the discount little coupon thing, you go to buy it, you're going to get an extra $5 off. So you're going to get it for $42. So you're going to get it at 52% off of what it's going to sell after this initial week. It's the only time I'm going to drop it this low. You know, I may run a special here and there during the holidays or whatever where I might take $10, $20 off. But I assure you, it will never be cheaper than $42 ever again. I just know the amount of time and effort that I put into it. I'm really proud of it. So I really don't even want to sell it that cheap, if I'm being honest. But I'm trying to get it off the ground and running, trying to get my name out there with some different publications. And this is going to be the first one that I'm really trying to push. So I really would appreciate it if you do like this episode, you have liked my material in the past, you like the conjugate system, you just want to learn more about max effort based strength training, I assure you that book will answer everything you ever wanted to know outside of the podcast episode that you listened to today. So key takeaways from today's episode, outside of everything from max effort wise and getting the ebook, that key takeaways. Number one, max effort training is 90% loads or more in more cases than not that produces superior strength gains through neurological based adaptations. Number two is that exercise rotation is critical to avoid accommodation and help reduce injury risk over the long haul. Number three, it is not for everyone. And I'll be the first to admit that beginners need to build a base first. There might be people that don't want to max out consistently. Absolute strength is not their maximum goal. So it is not for everybody, but you can take bits and pieces of it throughout your training career to help improve your performance. Again, regardless of what you need to do, there's still some great things you can take away from the max effort-based method. Number four, recovery and intelligent programming are non-negotiable with the system. I do think understanding it, again, going back to the ebook, that's why I created the ebook. I tried to take a lot of that guesswork out. It's really designed more for the beginner to intermediate to be able to understand the system and be able to be able to implement it and make progress. But it's also designed in a way that advanced people can get some more advanced training methods out of it as well. Make you think about how you're actually programming. If you're doing your own programming, I do think as a leg up that I have in this ebook that most people do not think about when it comes to the max effort method. And number five, when it's done right, it's one of the safest and most effective methods for building absolute max strength. Somebody that ran it for years and absolutely loved it, I can attest, it got me stupid strong. So don't be afraid of obviously using the method. Give it a shot. I assure you, you will like some of the things you see if you implement some of the things I talked about today, and it's in the ebook. But also don't be stupid about what you're doing. Build your foundation, master your technique, do the basic stuff, program intelligently, and gradually work your way into the max effort method. And your body is definitely capable of handling it. You'll be surprised at how quickly your lifts excel, especially when you start picking the right rotations, maximizing your recovery, doing the right accessory work with it. It will really catapult your ability to put pounds on your total or your squat or your bench press or deadlift if you just happen to be targeting on a niche lift. So if you want the complete roadmap, again, the science, the programs, the exercises, all that kind of stuff, grab Max Effort Training, the complete guide at the link that you'll see in the description box if you're on Instagram or on YouTube, or in the show notes if you're having to listen on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, or whatever. Or you can head over to my Instagram at bsmitley. It's there in my link tree, very first link. You can do it there. Again, 12 chapters, 9 complete training programs, or 10,000 words of complete actionable content. And again, if you buy it before November 3rd, again, you're going to get immediately $40 off. It's already taken off for you. And if you enter that code MAXEFFORT5, MAXEFFORT5, you'll save an additional $5 off that $47, bringing it down to $42. If you enjoyed today's episode, please do a favor, leave a review, leave a 5-star, leave a nice little like, thumbs up, subscribe on YouTube, leave me a comment, let me know what you liked about today's episode. And you can also share it with a friend, training partner that you think can benefit from the max effort method. Or if you pick up the ebook, share with a friend, tell them to pick it up as well. Tag me on Instagram, leave a review of the book if you happen to read it. You can read it in a couple hours. It is very digestible. It's made so you can read it on your phone. You can read it on a computer. You can read it on a tablet. Super easy to read. But just tag me on social media that you read, that you liked it, leave a review of it. I would really appreciate it. It really would help me out. And obviously, if you're not already, go ahead and subscribe on the YouTube channel. Subscribe for listening to the Thirst More podcast wherever you enjoy your podcast so you never miss another episode. Until next time, I really appreciate you. Stay strong, and I'll see you at the next episode. Thanks for listening to the Thirst More podcast. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else you like to consume your podcast. You can also check us out on YouTube at The Smitley, where you'll find clips and lots of educational-based material for strength and conditioning and exercise science. You can also make sure you give me a follow on Instagram at bsmitley or at Team Thirst, which is my gym Instagram page. For any more future updates on episodes to come, you can make sure you follow me there. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next episode.